Hello, this is Vlad, and you are listening to Olafil's Fantasy Podcast.
I am Listo, Senor William.
All right, with that, the Gusta Fantasy starts right now. On your pod, Apple Pod, Stitcher, Spotify, no, not Spotify, a pod of choice. Thanks for listening to Jeff and I ramble on about nothing. Even though it is August 13th, the middle of August, the Ides of August, Jeff, football should have been football last week. There should be football this week. Alas, there will not be, but we still have stuff to talk about, Jeff. This is going to be the most interesting fantasy and just real life season pretty much of all time, and I know people say that every year, but this has a different connotation, which we will get to shortly. And we also got, of course, some interesting stuff happening not in the NFL world, college, and of course the English footy, but for different reasons, Jeff. Ooh, English football. Ooh, lasso. Jeff, how you doing?
Well, I'm excited to be here. It's a wonderful day to talk all manner of things. You are correct. It's going to be an interesting year for fantasy and football, and it's been already an interesting year for sports in general. I don't know if you want to get me up to speed on the NBA, MLB, updates. Not sure there's much. I created the Facebook group. I'm about to reload up the old Yahoo League for what I'm calling Wrathful Fantasy, the Chantilly Cream of fantasy football leagues. I haven't checked the Facebook recently, but it seems like we're getting some interest. So people are, they're remembering, oh yeah, fantasy football, it can distract me from the goings and comings of the world. And I think we definitely need that nowadays. So there are also the wonders of television, Will. And you kind of teased it in your little intro. You got me super excited because you texted me about Ted Lasso, depends on which side of the pod you're on, I guess. I got all excited. I'm like, well, I'm going to watch it tonight. I was like, Shay, come. We got this new Jason Sudeikis show, but it actually comes out tomorrow on Apple TV. And I keep calling it Apple Plus, and it's beginning to bother Shay. So I think I'm going to continue on that front. Apple Plus TV. Ted Lasso, I am looking forward to it. Shay, needless to say, did not seem interested at all. So, sounds like a perfect show.
It does, and the bit on Saturday Night Live from, gosh, it must be like 5 or 6 years ago at this point. It was a Saturday Night Live sketch, I believe. Great. But he was taking over Tottenham. I believe in this show, he's taken over some fake team. I don't know if it's fake or not. I honestly don't dive deep into the level 2 English football world, but he's trying to take a team from pretty much the bare bottom to the top at this point. And, will it kind of run, what's the word I want to say, one joke into the ground? Or is it going to kind of, elaborate a little bit more on it? But I'm very excited. I'm actually going to turn on the Apple Plus TV on. I have activated it, but I have yet to actually watch anything because, of course, the weekly reviews from you, Jeff, have been less than stellar. So the anticipation of myself turning it ever on has never grown above a whimper.
Well, I'm excited, Will. I mean, now you'll get to actually, watch Greyhound. That's definitely another.
Yes.
Gotta watch. And then, dabble in the other things. You might get some entertainment. There are some long running shows out there, Will. One that I haven't partaken in, but has been around for many seasons, Married at First Sight. I've seen it. I've been intrigued. Is it high quality? Like, what kind of shenanigans do these people get into?
So I remember watching the first season years ago, but that's not what this is about. And then I didn't realize it was still going on until probably 6 or 8 months ago when Ashley started watching season 10, because that took place in Charlotte. So they take place in different cities across America. There's also obviously like Australian versions and all that, but that's not what we're getting into here. So she was watching the Charlotte one, And it was cool because we literally, if they just, you saw places that we go to all the time, and you saw familiar faces or whatever. And Ashley has now seen two of the people from that show at a certain bar here in Charlotte. And she approached one of them. Then she said that she was not a very, she was a see you next Tuesday kind of girl, if you know what I mean. And then the other guy she saw was a douchebag in the show, but you know, in real life, she didn't really get to talk to him, but he seemed just like whatever, like not a total douche, but it's cool because you get to see, you know, your landscape, all that stuff. So that's what we got into season 10. Season 11 is taking place in New Orleans. And this, the reason I bring this up is because, you know, you can call it fake, you can call it whatever. It's the premise is you don't meet your significant other until the day you get married. You don't meet them until you're at the altar, until you see the bride coming down the hallway. And these quote-unquote matchmakers and doctors, you know, they match you up perfectly based on personality traits and all this stuff, and they just see if it works. At the end of the season, you decide if you're going to get a divorce or if you're going to keep it going. Now, this season has been great in terms of the chemistry. Like, all the people have been really fun, with the exception of this one couple. And this is the only reason why I'm even bringing this show up into existence on this pod. This girl, she seems very outgoing, energetic, you know, travels the world, all this stuff, cute girl. This guy, I think he says a total of 5 words an episode. He is quiet. He reminds me of like a Kip, Napoleon Dynamite's brother from the movie Napoleon Dynamite. Like, not the way he like overly talks, but the way when he talks, he kind of talks mumbly, and she goes like, oh yeah, I guess so. And that's all he says like the entire episode and all these shows. So all the other couples are watching this couple not talk. It is the most cringeworthy must watch TV this so far this season. I don't even care about the other couples. The other couples are doing great, but every time this couple, Henry and Christina, come on. The dude doesn't even know. The dude, they went to Mexico on the honeymoon and they were doing like a mud bath, right? And it was a mud bath. It was kind of like a mud bath slide where you just go on a slide. And he was like, oh, I don't. He's like, she's like, all right, you ready? I was like, I don't know. And she's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I mean, you know, I guess. I mean, yeah, whatever. I mean, yeah, I'll do it. It's fine. And she's like, okay, well, let's go do it. So they do it. And after they're done doing, he's looking like he's miserable. He's like, oh, I just don't know if I'm going to do anything more. This is the most exciting thing I've ever done in my life. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just so outrageous. And she goes, what? And he's like, I mean, I just, you know, if we can do something a little less intense next time, that'll be great. And it's like, what in the world? So you have to watch these two. Again, must watch TV, Henry and Christina. I'm waiting for a spinoff. Like, I don't know what it's going to be called, but I want a spinoff of these two, Married at First Sight, season 11. You got to check out these people.
All right. I mean,
I'm telling you, you're going to love it. It's so bad.
Henry
it's so
and
bad.
Christina.
Yeah.
Is each episode a different couple, or do they
come? No. Nope, they interweave them. They interweave. Okay. Oh, my God. I typed in Henry and the third thing that pops up is Christina.
Oof.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, so there you go. Married at First Sight makes more. Oh, wow. I can't wait to keep reading this. Anyways, that's my recommendation for that show. Definitely. I think you guys watched all your Netflix dating shows and, you know, your hooking up shows and whatever you call them on Netflix. You might want to give this. Plus, it's cool. They go, like, there's, I believe there's one in Austin. There's one in Philadelphia. I don't know the California locales, if they've done some in California. But I'm going to have to look that up and see.
Interesting.
But that's Married at First Sight.
Married at First Sight, season 11, out there now.
Oh, take a guess as to what network it's on. Just take a guess.
Oof. I don't know. E?
That's a solid guess. It's not right. It's a Lifetime.
Ooh, Lifetime.
Yeah. Very interesting. Just to kind of give you a recap here, there's been New York City, Northern New Jersey, Atlanta, South Florida, Chicago. I'm trying to see if there's any California one. Boston, Dallas, Philadelphia, Charlotte, DC, New Orleans. So none in California yet.
Seems like a very West Coast, you know, specific show.
Yeah, but last everything's been on the East Coast. No, ooh, a Vegas one. Now that would be absolutely amazing. All right, Jeff, what do you got for me on this next one?
Well, I mean, we're talking about long-running shows, and we got a couple more to hit here. Shay and I have been getting back into the old Catfish. I believe the episodes are on Hulu now, an MTV show. If only, you know, it's you just turn your brain off and you feel better about yourself. It's one of those. I just want there to be like a daily fantasy or just like a live betting props for Catfish, or like at least a drinking game, because there's only about 5 or 6 different ways these episodes go. Even though they touted this new season as something, a never before thing happens every single time in each episode. And one of the things was like, oh, they actually use their real phone. They're kind of a real person. And I was like, I feel like that's happened before, Neve. I feel like you're tricking me this season. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, Will. You said you were big into it. We've been watching it. It's something. It's out there. I think there's like 13 seasons. They've had like 168 people get catfished on television. And, you know, it's sad how little research people, you know, do, or the signs of she only talks to me on the phone for 2 minutes and then hangs up. No video chats for 3 years. Like, come on now, people. It's 2020. It's not like we're back in, you know, 08 where, you know, the technology wasn't there. I mean, you can get on a Zoom or a Google chat or whatever for free. It's you can go to a cyber cafe and get in there for a buck or two.
I have a lot of thoughts on this show. First thing is they are doing a new season. I think it just started. I haven't seen it, but it is a coronavirus season. So I guess they're doing everything. Like, Neve is on video chat. Like, they're never meeting in person, so I don't really know how that's going to fly. But to your point, it must be hard to make.
She doesn't want a video chat. All right. Well, I guess we're done.
To your point about technology and all that, this show, obviously, 13 years ago was huge, because you never had the capabilities of video chatting in 2 seconds, or, you know, people had flip phones or non-iPhones and all that stuff. So that was much more believable to think you're talking to a real person. But nowadays, I mean, come on, you have a phone, it has a camera. Like, unless this is Catfish, you know, Catfish baby boomers, they're not going to have a camera on their phone. Yeah. One thing that I will credit Catfish to, and I don't know, I'm going to say the answer to this is no. I don't think they've ever won any TV awards or production awards, but the production elements and the graphics of this show are outstanding. Like, I love the way they'll weave in text messages into, like, you know, the real life environment, or they'll do the weird camera angles, and they'll just kind of bring the computer into the focus or whatever. Everything they do is very nifty. So props to them. They really do a great job with their production elements and keeping you on your toes. Now, maybe the teases of this is the biggest catfish revelation yet. Maybe those are a little bit on the hyperbolic side. But it still keeps you interested and keeps you guessing. And that is just a great – I kind of relate it to Family Guy. It's a great background show, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep, you can understand the entire context. You just flip it on or tune in and you're like, oh, okay, I know what's going on here. I don't need much more.
Have you seen the Katy Perry episode?
Maybe. I don't – It sounds familiar. Was this before she was very famous, or was this post-fame?
No, she's famous.
Because I was reminded that Katy Perry played Warped Tour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm guessing you haven't seen it, because this is an episode where a guy thinks he's talking to Katy Perry.
Oh, God.
So, I guess you have not seen this episode. Wow. I mean, maybe he is. I won't spoil it for you. Yeah, he's talking to Katy Perry. on the internet. So stay tuned for that one. That must have been like a season 7 or something. So have fun with that. I won't spoil it for you if he's really talking to Katy Perry or not, Jeff. So there you go. Let's keep it on the Hulu wagon. Parasite. You finally watched that. It won Best Picture, I believe, whenever that was last year. I was definitely waiting for that to come out, and I couldn't wait. So what are your thoughts on this movie? Was there any barriers with the subtitles or, you know, any overratedness?
No, I thought it was really good. I wasn't challenged by the subtitles. I thought I would be, but I thought it was a good story. It kind of had some good twists and turns, some surprises. We won't do any spoiler alerts here on the pod. But Best Picture, I don't know. I was thoroughly entertained. I have to remember what the other options were that year, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was kind of, you know, kept you on your toes, got some good twists and turns. Yeah, some cringeworthy moments, some things of that nature. So I thought it was good. What did you think?
This sounds like an Apple review from Jeff over here. It was good. I was thoroughly entertained. I did think some stuff was not believable. There is a scene where a family is hiding under a dining room table for what amounts to an entire night, right? Don't they spend the night under it?
Yep.
Trying to hide from another couple, and somehow they make it work. Don't understand how that works. I thought it was good. I don't know. I don't really care about Best Picture. Like, that's usually for like a snooty movie anyway. So I was kind of happy that won it.
Snood.
But it was nice. It was a nice change of pace. I do think it's kind of a must-see movie. I mean, there was definitely some weird stuff in that movie. The term parasite, you can kind of, like, going into it, I had no knowledge of what this movie was about. I had zero. Was it a horror movie? I don't know, maybe. Was it a, you know, a thriller, a mystery? I literally had zero idea. So now knowing that it's called Parasite, I get it about what the movie's about. And it's interesting that maybe some people could get away with what they were doing. I guess not a big deep dive into Parasite. Good movie, though. I do recommend it. Good movie. Yabazo.
Yabazo, yes. Looking at the other nominations from 2019, I mean, I've seen most of these. We got Ford vs. Ferrari, Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, no idea what that is, Joker, Little Women, who knew they even made a remake of that, Marriage Story, 1917, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Now, when you put it up against those, I think, you know, it might be the best of those. I haven't seen 1917 yet, but I want to see that one. I think I've seen most of the other ones except Little Women and Jojo Rabbit. But I don't know. I guess at that point it's personal preference, and there were some interesting elements with the international flavor to Parasite.
Very strange for 80-year-old white men to pick that movie. Right? I mean, I feel like they would have picked something different.
Yeah.
Good on them.
It seemed like Ford versus Ferrari was a little more up there.
I feel like that was right where they were going. You know, good old Bob and Harold and Gerald, and, you know, I'm sure they, you know, there's probably like a Francis thrown in there. I'm sure they debated long and hard, and maybe they wanted to go against the grain there with Parasite.
Speaking of Ford, one of the Ford heiresses is the owner of the Lions, and we got NFL things to talk about because it's on the TV, Will. Hard Knocks, you know, my household, Roku is engaged in a contract dispute with HBO, and so they took off HBO Go, and you have to have HBO, pay for HBO Max now, regardless if you're using your in-laws login to your HBO account. So haven't been able to watch the first Hard Knocks episode with both LA teams. The only knowledge I have is that there is, I don't know if it's controversy or excitement or something about Sean McVay in a hot tub. That's all I know.
So the show was good. It was better than expected. I was expecting a boring show. I am a Chargers fan. Rams were notoriously very boring. Might be one of the worst Hard Knocks seasons when they were on. That's because they did have Jeff Fisher. But yeah, it was fine. A lot of COVID stuff. There was very little football, which there's very little football now. And this was, what, shot like maybe 2 weeks ago. Very quick turnaround with Hard Knocks. Shows... just a lot of COVID testing, very fun, very funny, lighthearted stuff. All the players getting scared with the nostril swabs. There's even one meme going around where the nurse says, all right, I'm just going to, you know, just the tip's going to go in. It's not going to hurt. And then the linebacker of the Rams kind of turns around and faces the camera and just stares at the camera when she says it. Oh, that was pretty funny. The Sean McVay thing. So it starts, the episode I feel like was a lot more Chargers than Rams, and it kind of starts with Anthony Lynn. He's got his cigar, he's outside with his smoker and his barbecue, you know, his grill and all that stuff with his wife, and they're just talking about how they met, how he used to work in Cleveland, and they're just making jokes, very cute, grilling. He's using, by the way, life hack alert, he's using a fork wrapped with a napkin and a rubber band, right? He's using that as his, brush for barbecue sauce on his chicken. And I was like, oh, interesting. And the wife was like, why don't I just buy you a brush for Christmas? And he's like, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, whatever. Just, right? So.
You make millions of
dollars. So listen. So that's the scene for like 5 minutes. Literally the next scene. Like, it just goes straight to Sean McVay in his $8 million penthouse. Overlooking, you know, the cliffs of Los Angeles. I mean, it's like they live on the Hollywood sign. Outside in his the very first line is Sean McVay to his fiance. So I'm feeling like a little rosé today. What do you think? And they just go and they get some rosé and sit outside overlooking their cliff. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to go in our pool and play basketball with our dog. Takes off his shirt, hops in the pool. And starts throwing his dog, you know, a basketball because he says, oh, watch, she can score hoops or whatever. And she doesn't. She just bites at the ball like Gucci does this, right? He'll just bite at the ball and the ball will come back to him. And that's it. That's the next scene. Like, I'm like, wow. So we have Anthony Lynn, who is a head coach, using a fork with a napkin and a rubber band as a brush on his grill outside. You know, just, they're not even at their house. It looked like they were at the Chargers facility, to be honest. And then you go to the next scene where Sean McVay has like a 22-year-old fiance who looks like a, you know, no offense to her, but looks like she's constantly has a facial filter on her, drinking rosé, looking at their, you know, looking out the cliffs of Los Angeles. So that was a very interesting side-by-side comparison of the two lifestyles there. I've never been a big Anthony Lynn guy in terms of coaching, but seems like a pretty cool dude. He also revealed in the very first scene that he had coronavirus during this. So that was like breaking news. Like immediately during the show, Adam Schefter tweets out, so it looks like we found out who on the Chargers had coronavirus. It was the coach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, very first scene, he says, I'm the one who got it, so no one can be safe. Whatever.
That's pretty crazy. Yeah. I want to ask, Will. You said there wasn't a lot of football, but one thing, at least in my mind, that Hard Knocks is known for is semi-slow motion montages of people doing football drills. And in my head, as you were talking about people getting swabbed, I just had that music like, da-da-da, and then like the nurse just swabbing them in slow motion. And putting it in the vial, but was there any of that, or was there actual football at all?
There was
any Jared Goff bad jokes or idiot statements to
okay, so yet? So not a hot take, but Ashley recognizes as well. We all hate the Rams logo; it's so bad. It's the one where it's like the L A, and then it makes like a C behind it, where it looks like an L A Chargers logo, kind of. Mm-hmm. It's awful. So Jared Goff pulls up in his new BMW, whatever he's driving. And he gets a temperature check, and his one line, I think, of the entire show was, or I guess not the entire show, but most of it was, oh, well, you're wearing the new merch, huh? And the guy goes, yeah. And Jared Goff goes just like, cool, man, looks great, bye. And then he just drives away, and I'm like, what? All right, cool. So that's your Jared Goff moment.
Awesome.
And football-wise, a little bit of football. I mean, there was scenes where they were doing slow walkthroughs, and they showed Justin Herbert throwing footballs into a target and nailing every single one, which could be editing. Don't know. No Tyrod Taylor footage, except for, like, him with a new hairdo.
Yeah, I think the trailer, the quarterback trailer is going to be tough to pull off in the world of coronavirus, I feel like.
Yeah, so that is Hard Knocks. I'm excited to watch next week where there will be more. Maybe they'll throw some slow motion swabs in the intro.
Yeah. They're listening to us, so, I mean, other shows are stealing content from this show. I mean, we got the Trailblazers. We are, Will.
I know, we are. Let's start moving into some NFL news and fantasy news, Jeff. So this isn't so much NFL news, kind of, but it does have an impact on it. College football, a lot of conferences just saying no mas. The big ones, Pac-12 and the Big Ten. Now, the key words here, they're not canceling it, and this is kind of like me and you with the bold predictions, right? Not canceling, but postponing. So they are going to try to do some form of spring football. I imagine the Pac-12 could definitely do winter if they wanted to, because they don't have to worry about the elements, as opposed to, you know, Wisconsin playing regular season games in January when it's 0 degrees and 6 feet of snow out. That's the Big Ten. Then you also have the Mountain West and the MAC, the Mid-Athletic Conference, I believe it stands for. Not actually 100% sure what it stands for.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
So that means no Boise State, no San Diego State, no Blue Field, right? I mean, is it even football if there's no Blue Field? Again, it's possibly spring. The SEC, of course, is doing anything they can to play, because if there's no SEC football, then what are they going to do during this time of year? The big thing is, what does that do for the draft next year? Mm. Obviously, the big names like Trevor Lawrence, he's fighting to play. But at what point do you say never mind, right? Because it's going to be, if they postpone it to spring or even late winter, are you really going to want to play football and then a draft is in 2 months? So it's going to impact these big players, and a lot of these players, I mean, some players have already opted out anyway in college. I guess some of the defensive players have. But this is going to kind of start to leak into the NFL, whether it's the product or the practicing and the players. Does this have you worried at all for the NFL, Jeffrey?
NFL-wise, well, I mean, from a league and playing perspective, no, because it's much easier to manage than, you know, a million different conferences and people flying all over and the bowl games and everything like that. When there's only, you know, 32 teams in our league, it's a bit more manageable. But it is interesting for the draft. I mean, people like Trevor Lawrence probably don't have to play another down of college and will still be first round pick. If not going for the number one overall pick, given the tape he's put down. But it is interesting to think, like, there will be no Joe Burrow from this college football season, likely. There will be no one who comes out of nowhere with the, you know, best statistical season ever to vault themselves to the top. Because I get it for the SEC, ACC, like, they have their own networks. They'll still make money. But I always understood college football as it's all about the bowls and it's all about the TV rights for those small colleges. And it's all about, you know, the playoff. That's pretty much how they get their piles of cash. So without two of the big five or whatever they call it, like, there can't be a playoff. If there is, it has an asterisk. I mean, so it's kind of... Then I don't think they're all going to want to play in the spring, but I wouldn't necessarily be opposed. I mean, I might actually watch a little bit more college football if it was in the spring. So.
Have you heard of, like, certain – there's, like, Nebraska. They're the one – they're in the Big Ten, but they're like, we're going to play anyway. Like, whoever wants to play us, we'll play. And that's even kind of like the local team here, Charlotte, University of Charlotte. They they said the kind of the same thing, because some of their conference is still alive. The freaking Sun Belt, or I don't know what the hell conference they play in, the WAC. I couldn't even tell you. But a couple teams have opted out themselves, which would leave their schedule incomplete. So they're like saying, you know, we'll play. Imagine if they're just, if Alabama was like, okay, we'll play you. Like, what's the, like, what is the plan? Anyway, what's the point of that? Breaking news, Jeff. George Kittle just signed a $75 million extension to the 49ers. Curse of the pod avoided, Jeff. So there not yet. Go. No major curse of the pod yet. The opt-outs were last week, but there was something I think they talked about on ATN, was players can still opt out if it's a medical reason. So
yes,
we'll see. We'll see if we get a curse of the pod today, Jeff, with medical issues due to COVID-19.
It will be interesting. New virus, new team.
Yes,
new
I was waiting for you to do something. Great job by you.
There were a lot of changes this past offseason outside of the coronavirus. I mean, I don't think it's being given enough due. Big name fantasy players, you know, moving teams, coming back into the league. A lot of new coaches that. I mean, I think we'll get into that a little bit later, but you've got some interesting new faces in new places, either ors. Woo. Lay it on me, Will.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to have the ADPs right in my, like, they're in my hand right now. Brought to us by, of course, Fantasy Football Calculator, the real ADP champions here. So we're going to talk about some new players on new teams. One of them kind of just came out of nowhere to me when I was doing my research earlier today, and you couldn't even guess what team he was on. So first things first, I'm going to give you their ADP as well. So we're going to start with the tight end position, the lovely just wasteland that is. First one, Rob Gronkowski, going in the 10th round, 108th overall-ish, of course, give or take a couple picks. Still very late. So it's like, are you willing? I mean, that is waiting a long time. I did think it was a little bit earlier than that. But 108th overall, or do you wait until 154 overall, 13th, 14th round? Eric Ebron, star 2 years ago, an absolute stud for the Colts before he got hurt last year, of course, going to the Steelers. I mean, yeah, that's just a late, you know, before your defense pick, Eric Ebron. So who would you rather have?
Ooh, I mean, it's the name and the team for Gronk, right? You don't know. He's kind of a wild card. I mean, he looks to be in shape, but Gronk is going to Gronk, and who knows what shenanigans he could get into. Eric Ebron, right? It's about coming into a situation. We saw a couple years ago, Vance McDonald had some value, and before that, Heath Miller was always a big Pittsburgh tight end. Eric Ebron last year didn't exactly put up huge numbers. He was probably in the top 20 of tight ends, averaged, you know, right around 7 points per game, which isn't terrible, but it's also part of, you know, a huge mass of tight ends. So from an upside perspective, I think Gronk probably has higher upside. Ebron, I think his upside is, you know, right around that top 10 tight end. I'm probably not drafting Ebron, but he's someone that I think will be a waiver wire pickup. I just think there are other younger tight ends that, you know, maybe are a little bit spicier.
Yeah, I mean, what, like Noah Fant? Noah Fant's going in the 9th round. Your boy Mike Gesicki, 9th round. So you'd rather have Mike Gesicki than Eric Ebron?
Yeah, I think Mike Gesicki, he's one of those receiving type tight end. Like, Ebron's value is pure red zone, right? Mm-hmm. Like, big body, jump, like, not even really jumping, but just give me that ball, box some guys out and score a touchdown. So from that perspective, I think Ebron has maybe more touchdown upside, but I think Gesicki, given the receiving core and his athletic ability, maybe has a bit more week-to-week stability with some upside. And again, we're talking later. I mean, I if we want to go like free versus free, someone like Jonnu Smith in the 12th round versus Eric Ebron, I would go Jonnu Smith. Like, he has probably more upside in that Tennessee play action offense than Ebron, where it's a pretty question mark. It's a pretty big question mark. So yeah, I don't like Gronk at where he's currently being drafted, but again, it's late enough to where you can definitely recover.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is. Before I made this, I thought Gronk was getting drafted earlier. I had no idea it was going 10th round. So good on the people. You know what I mean? Good on the people not biting on Gronk, his return to the NFL. Next one, wide receivers, new teams, all this stuff. Robbie Anderson, I knew he was on a different team. It just took me a minute to figure it out. He is now on the Panthers, the deep threat of a guy with a quarterback who may not throw the deepest. Robbie Anderson going in the 10th round. Emmanuel Sanders on the Saints now, that new number two receiver. They still got, obviously, Michael Thomas and then Jared Cook over there, Jared Cook being a tight end. He's going in the late 8th round, kind of like 8th, 9th round turn. So Emmanuel Sanders or Robbie Anderson? Robbie Anderson, definitely a lot younger. Who would you rather have?
Gosh. Robbie Anderson on the Panthers. Sanders on the Saints. I think, like, full disclosure from a strategy perspective, I think this year, whereas last year I would get intrigued by someone like Emmanuel Sanders, I think he's going to be someone I'm going to avoid this year. And if I'm in the 8th, 9th round and I've already got, you know, ideally three other wide receivers, I would rather have someone with a lot more upside than either of these players. I mean, Robbie Anderson was supposed to be, you know, the big play, high risk, high reward guy in New York last year. He wasn't that. He's now, his skill set doesn't really vibe with Teddy Bridgewater. There's other receiving options. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey is there and is just a target machine. Emmanuel Sanders likely on the better offense, but probably going to disappear sometime. So if I'm in this spot in the draft, I guess I'm leaning more Robbie Anderson, but I think Emmanuel Sanders will finish higher. Just Robbie Anderson has the skills and the athletic ability to, I guess, have a higher ceiling.
This is also technically someone who's in a new team, CeeDee Lamb, rookie for the Cowboys. He's going right behind Robbie Anderson. So would you rather have CeeDee Lamb?
Or Robbie Anderson?
Yeah, or Emmanuel Sanders. They're all going in the same kind of, you know, one round apart. So would you rather wait on receiver for one more pick and then take CeeDee Lamb?
Yeah, I'd probably go that route. Just someone with that could potentially have high upside,
yeah, and if for sure
they ride the bench, you know, it's a 10th round pick, so I'm not. They could be a keeper and they could be nothing, and it's the upside is there. So
these next two players were drafted in the same first round, picks right next to each other. I think it was like 6 picks apart, maybe. I'm just going off the top of my head, maybe even 2 picks apart, not sure. Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon. We've talked about Todd Gurley kind of a lot. Melvin Gordon surprisingly going pretty dang high in drafts. I'm not quite sure why. Melvin Gordon, 3rd round, and your boy Todd Gurley, end of the 5th, very beginning of the 6th, that turn, 5th, 6th turn. Who would you rather have?
Gurley on the Falcons, Gordon on the Broncos. You look at these two players on a per-game basis last year, very similar in half PPR, 13.6 for Gurley, 13.3 for Gordon on a per-game basis. If I had to say Gordon with, you know, Philip Lindsay, could eat into some of those catches. Gurley last year, that was the biggest I think, impact to his value. I mean, he was a touchdown machine. Obviously, he didn't look 100% running through the tackles, but the catches and the drops were just kind of, the lack of catches and the drops were kind of way up. I think I would rather have Gurley, just want to get more into that offense. I think the catch potential is higher for Gurley coming from Matt Ryan. Lord knows what Denver's offense is going to be. You know, I am a Drew Lock hater, if there is even such a thing. So, I mean, Melvin Gordon, he is talented. He's got to be healthier than Gurley, but I would probably, I think Gurley with those catches and the presence of a non-real third down back, I think will help him. So yeah, I think I'll go Gurley.
How worried are you about Gurley? Like, just in terms of just health, nothing else, just health.
Well, we've said it before on the pod. I don't think it could get much worse than last year. He's clearly not the same, but you're comparing not the same to the number one overall running back in fantasy, right? Mm-hmm. Like an absolute superstar. So he's probably not that level, but he's still an above average running back in the league on a, you would think, high-powered offense that's going to move the ball with a lot of weapons that will help draw attention away from Gurley. Although we could have said that about the Rams last year when we thought they were going to be at all world again as an offense. You know, I think people are making a lot more out of the move, the release from the Rams, about his health versus the contract they gave him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I view it more as like his number was insane. It was even almost insane at his, you know, number one running back in the league production. So now it's a worry, and that's why he's an RB2 versus a borderline RB1 for most people, I feel like. That's why he's a fourth round versus a second round pick, is the health. So it's hard not to be worried about it. But I think, you know, the opportunity, we've seen lesser running backs in the Falcons offense mm-hmm. be RB2s. And so for that reason, I'm not as worried about it.
Last one, Jeff, the quarterback position. I added a couple more names because the first two I was like, eh, whatever. But all four of these are literally going between four picks of each other. These are pretty much the quarterbacks. If you want to wait till the 14th, the 13th round to take, whether it's your starting quarterback or your backup quarterback as like an upside guy, these are the ones, all of them on new teams. What a year for quarterbacks. Cam Newton. This is the order they're going in as well. Cam Newton, Teddy Bridgewater, Phillip Rivers, or Joe Burrow, all in the late 13th, 14th round kind of turn, middle 13th round for Cam Newton. These are four very interesting quarterbacks. I mean, if you want to, I mean, I don't even know which one of these has the most upside. I was going to say Burrow, but I guess Newton maybe. I think we can maybe agree which one has the floor, the one that might, you know, not be very exhilarating out of these four. But if you had to kind of choose one of these to either be your backup if you needed him, or if you wanted to go zero QB and just wait to the very end of the draft, which one are you going with?
Some interesting thoughts this year, especially with the COVID and maybe wanting to carry multiple quarterbacks. I mean, you gotta love Newton's potential upside. I mean, not a ton of weapons, but we've seen him with that rushing ability and the rushing touchdowns, especially. There is always upside there that, you know, Bridgewater, Rivers, definitely not gonna give you. And Burrow, who knows, he could have some rushing floor. Yeah, I think ideally, if I was just going to go for, you know, like you said, the zero QB or just wait till the end, I could feel okay with Cam Newton being my starter. I wouldn't want Bridgewater or Rivers. And then if I already had a quarterback and I wanted another high upside potential keeper, I mean, just keep Burrow and just see kind of how it plays out there in Cincinnati if they do improve. But yeah, I like Newton. I don't think his ADP, once we get a little bit more news on his health and how he's showing up in training camp, will stay at that 13th round very long. I think he'll start to move up boards.
I mean, obviously he already slowly has been since he's been signed with the Patriots, and it all has to do with, is he going to be healthy by the time it happens? I mean, listen, I think we can all rule out Bridgewater. I'm not getting Bridgewater on any of my teams. I don't care if there's a fire. I'm not getting Bridgewater. Rivers, the interesting thing about him, he's got, you know, 14 kids, so the COVID impact is there. You never know. One of those kids does something crazy and brings home the disease and just impacts an entire culture in that household. So there's definitely some risk there with Rivers. I like, we've talked about it before. Since I said the Cincinnati Bengals are going to make the playoffs. Joe Burrow, that team with, you know, AJ Green, fully healthy, Tyler Boyd, your lovely Joe Mixon. They're getting a first round offensive lineman back that they drafted last year. Another year in that guy's system, Zach or whatever his name is. Yeah, I knew it was Zach. Another year in that system for everybody else. I think Joe Burrow has a very exciting little teaser for you. So I like getting Joe Burrow if you can as your backup and hope you strike gold there. Cam Newton is interesting. Like you said, by the time we get into the gusto of drafts, is he going to still be there that late? Who knows? And of course, you're gonna have plenty of reports. You know, the tropes will be coming at some point. We're just now seeing him in the Patriots uniform, so the tropes will be coming, Jeff. With these players, so you got some tropey maybe analysis with some new coaches in new places. What do you got here?
I want to get your take, Will. I've been listening to the Fantasy Cognoscenti. And I just think there's a lot of assumptions in some cases, and there's a lot of just ignoring in other cases. And by that I mean, Christian McCaffrey was great last year because, you know, of his volume, workload, and what he was in that offense. But there's no, like, it's assumed this year that it will be similar, if, you know, not slightly down, but they have a new coach, you know, likely a new system, a new quarterback. There's no mention of that as any downside potential, and I'm not saying it's big. I mean, he's an awesome player. I think he should go one or two overall. But it's never like, well, he has a new coach. How does the new coach want to use him? Is it just like, oh, well, we're going to take a page out of – I don't think he was hired to take a page out of the previous coach's book and just start doing the same thing. He wants to put his, you know, his twist, his stamp on the season. You know, Mike McCarthy and the things he did in his past, like, he's now claiming he's a changed man, but what will that do for, you know, Zeke, Dak, Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup? Someone like CeeDee Lamb, you know, who knows if Blake Jarwin will get into the mix now.
Oh, wow.
There's no talk of that. You know, Joe Judge and the type of offense. We don't even know what type of offense he's going to want to run. But, you know, all these wide receivers seem to be late round picks. And Evan Ingram seems to be an ascendant, almost top five tight end now. Obviously, Zeke is a beast and just needs the opportunity, which I think he will get. None of those are really mentioned versus someone like Kevin Stefanski and the Browns is always used. His tenure with the Vikings, he's always used as kind of a one-to-one for what he's going to do on the Browns and their ability to support multiple wide receivers and have a strong run game. It's not paint by numbers, but it's just, I don't know. It's a little bit of how would you say, I don't know, opportunistic picking. You only look at maybe the positive aspects of it. You don't necessarily consider the downside or anything of that nature.
I mean, you could, you didn't, second I was gonna say you can also make the case for, like, we were just talking about the Bengals, Zach Taylor with his guy, right? Joe Burrow, instead of he came into the situation with Andy Dalton, and did he want him the whole time? Who knows? Joe Judge, can we just not even talk? I don't want to talk about this guy. The dude, I cannot believe there's a head coach in the league. Now, this guy, maybe 5 years down the road, everyone's going to be like, wow, how did we miss that? This guy is a star. He's got a defensive coordinator on the team who had like the 32nd ranked defense. I believe it was the Dolphins coordinator the year before. You have this guy's a special teams guy out of the Patriots system. They got Daniel Jones in his second season. Who knows how that's going to work out? Riverboat Ron and the Washington Football Club, bringing his culture and his players. Of course, oh, thanks, Jeff. Speaking of the Washington Football Club, Jeff writing in, you know, we had a curse of the pod, Darius Geis. We did have a curse of the pod last week, but we're talking about Washington, so there you go. Riverboat Ron, new culture, bringing in his guy, Kyle Allen. They're going to have Adrian Peterson just toting the rock all day, old school. But we just said last week how excited we were to watch this team because of the players and the potential they had. And of course, you could draft Darius Geis as your sneaky flex, possibly. And now he is no longer on this team. Matt Rhule is this young and upcoming guy. What is he going to have as a positive impact for their team and the Panthers? He seems to be saying all the right things. I do think you're right about Mike McCarthy. I think Mike McCarthy has just been kind of like a bleh hire for the Cowboys. Whether it's positive, negative, I think people are just like, what do you know? It's a retread coach who has been in the league for 15 years, and now he's back, you know, chunkier and meatier than ever, sitting on that podium with Jerry Jones. Is he going to be a yes man? Probably. And you know what? One person we forgot to talk about. We talked about Joe Judge. We didn't talk about Jason Garrett.
I know. Yeah, I was just going to say that.
I just got reminded of that. I think he might have more of an impact on that Giants team, more so than Joe Judge. You have Jason Garrett, who had Zeke, obviously, and he had DeMarco Murray before that. And now he comes in and he has Barkley. I think Jason Garrett might have a good way to maybe run that offense to the Giants' strengths. You have Evan Ingram, of course, who the Cowboys had Jason Witten for ever, 35 years ago they had Jason Witten. And now they have Evan Ingram on the Giants. So I think Jason Garrett might be more of that unsung positive impact that people aren't really talking about. Lastly, I want to get to Kevin Stefanski because I want to talk about Baker Mayfield. Mm-hmm. It's kind of unfortunate, right? Baker Mayfield came into the league, drafted so high, had a great first season, even though it was with a coaching staff that didn't really agree on everything. And then the second season comes in, they kind of clean house and have Freddie Kitchens take over for Todd Haley and all these guys, and that was just a disaster. And now year three for Baker Mayfield, it's another new regime, another new offense, but it is the same core group of talent. So I think having those players kind of stay together for this second full season or third season with Jarvis Landry and some of the offensive line, I think that's going to help a lot. And you just want to see this player and this coach stay together. Alex Smith, the story of forever ago, he was seen as a total bust. He had, I think, four different coaches in 4 years when he was on the 49ers. And he just seemed like a total failure because he could not get stability. And the Browns, that is something they haven't done for 20 years. They have yet to have stability in that locker room. So Baker Mayfield and that team and Stefanski hopefully can kind of keep that stability going and make a run with a team that has an offensive mind and, you know, the so-called offensive genius coming in there, Jeff.
The genius of Stefanski. I wanted to talk about some players, Will, that I think are interesting. I don't think we've talked about them a lot, and maybe we have.
I like it. I like it. Yeah.
Some in the fantasy community that are I think are being overlooked or not talked about enough. Want to start with Sorry, I'm just looking something up on the wide receiver I put there. Anyways, let's start with the quarterback, not the number one. Someone who isn't getting a lot of love.
He's also number 12. He's also number 12. Kind of.
He's being drafted number 12. Aaron Rodgers. I thought it was actually lower. I was a little surprised that he's at 12 because a couple of the pods I listened to, people had him as low as 18, 19. I was like, this is Aaron Rodgers we're talking about, right? 2 years ago, he was the number one overall quarterback drafted, or 2 or 3 years ago. I can't remember. Now he's off the map. He's not draftable. I mean, if anything, isn't he Drew Brees? Like, he's an accurate, capable, middle-of-the-road, stable quarterback with upside.
He's getting drafted after Josh Allen. He's getting drafted right next to Carson Wentz. And pretty much it's Rodgers, Wentz, and Breeze are pretty much like right next to each other. And then after that, you get Baker Mayfield, Daniel Jones, Tom Brady, whatever. I mean, what day and age would we be in when we say, oh yeah, Kyler Murray's getting drafted 3 rounds before Aaron Rodgers? Like, what is happening?
Yeah.
If I can get Aaron Rodgers in that 8th or 9th round, I mean, whew, I will. I'm all for that. I do not think we are in for some sort of down Aaron Rodgers year. I mean, is his offense still pretty crappy? Sure, but he makes the best out of Alan Lazard and whoever that dude was that caught the guy who caught multiple Jeff Janis, the Hail Mary King from years ago.
Yep.
So I think I would love if Aaron Rodgers stayed on that trajectory where, in terms of being drafted, I would love to have a piece of that for such a low investment.
Yeah. Give me some of that late in some drafts. Wide receiver. This guy is almost presumed to be a wide receiver one. Last year, he finished, you know, decently as a mid-level wide receiver two. We just talked about his team and his quarterback a little, and I believe your quote was, I will never take this quarterback ever. It's DJ Moore, Carolina Panthers wide receiver. He was the wide receiver 21 last year. He's currently going 13 in drafts. I just had him in the 4th round.
Yep, 4th round.
Fourth round pick. Now it's not so much a hater move on DJ Moore. I just think he's going a little high. Let me give you some guys and you tell me when you would take DJ Moore over them, okay? DK Metcalf.
You mean would I rather have him or when?
Would you rather have DJ Moore or DK Metcalf?
Oh God.
Maybe that DK was a bad Metcalf one. I thought you were a DK.
I would rather have DK Metcalf for sure.
Okay. Odell Beckham.
Okay. Odell Beckham. Yeah. Oh my God. For sure. Odell
Terry
Beckham.
Terry McLaurin. Scary Terry.
So I see Terry McLaurin in the 6th round. Would I rather wait for Terry McLaurin? 100%. Yes.
Juju. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Give me Juju over DJ.
Another 2 round difference. Marquise Hollywood Brown coming into his 2nd year.
I think I'd rather have DJ Moore.
Okay.
Not a big Marquise Brown guy.
I think he's in that kind of 5th round range. So I think he's about a round too early. I think he's a talented player. I just don't know in that offense if they're going to be able to fully support Christian McCaffrey at his pace last year. Plus, remember, they have Curtis Samuel and Robbie Anderson there as well. Not saying that they're, you know, huge target sucks, but I think where he finished last year is probably about where he'll finish this year. He'll be, you know, wide receiver 18 to 24. He'll be a solid wide receiver too, with some upside games. But there are just a couple other people being drafted after him that I know I would take. So
I got a couple of ones for you. I think this is the year of the acronym or the initials. So I'm gonna give you a couple here.
Oh, yeah.
Which DJ would you rather have, Moore or Chark?
That one's close. I think I would probably go DJ Chark, if only just for the name. I think that's what took it over the top. I think they're both talented, and I mean the quarterbacks are probably more similar than we think.
Which AJ would you rather have, brown or green? And colors, by the way. Wow, I mean, just which AJ color would you want?
Are we talking at where they're currently being drafted?
AJ Brown, it's pretty much the same. Fourth round for AJ Brown. End of fifth, it's pretty much where Terry McLaurin's going. AJ Green, beginning of sixth round, end of fifth round. Gosh. So would you rather wait one round and take AJ Green or take AJ Brown?
I think AJ Green, but that's tough.
I know, it's tough. I really want him to do well this year. I really want AJ Green to do a lot of initials. That's me. You know, don't take the wrong one, guys. Don't take the wrong Barkley. You know, Saquon or Matt. You don't want to mess that up.
that will happen, and you know, talking about Matt, so you'll draft a Matt Ryan. I want to skip the running back. He wasn't as interesting. I want to go to the tight end, Will. That I think there is a lot of love this year being showered upon Travis Kelce and George Kittle for good reason. The next guy I've heard kind of interchangeably spoken about is Zach Ertz and Mark Andrews. And I think in a lot of rankings, you'll see Mark Andrews ahead of Zach Ertz. He is currently going kind of end of, well, I guess, according to this, end of the third, but I saw him on another site going end of the fourth or even into the fifth round. Zach Ertz, not getting the love. I think people are higher on Dallas Goedert this year, but I mean, the receiving core in Philly hasn't exactly improved greatly. I think they've added some pieces, but ideally Carson Wentz will be healthy. Zach Ertz, I think, is a great, you know, athletic possession tight end with touchdown upside, probably still the top receiving option in that offense. He's someone, if I am in the fourth round and I'm happy with where I am, I have no issue taking him. And I don't feel like it's a reach. Whereas someone like Mark Andrews I just feel more safety with the blanket of Zach Ertz than Mark Andrews. I don't know how you feel.
I do forget how good Mark Andrews was last year. Just looking at these big games. He won people games, like, by himself.
Oh, yeah.
And now they got rid of Hayden Hurst, even though Fantasy Football Calculator doesn't believe they did. He is now on the Falcons. Yep. So that does free up, you know, allegedly, some targets for Mark Andrews. Their receiving core, the Ravens, that being not the greatest as well. So do you think Mark Andrews is going to be the guy? Just like last year, Zach Ertz, you just mentioned, fighting with Dallas Goedert. But their wide receivers aren't good, as you mentioned. Alshon Jeffrey's still there. DeSean Jackson somehow still kicking. And expected to contribute a lot. You know me, man. I do love Zach Ertz. I think just the tight end wasteland, as we kind of just talked about with Gronk, you have Evan Ingram you can possibly get in the sixth round. I just don't know if I'm going for any of these players, if I think there's even kind of a question mark. I think I'm just waiting until I'm comfortable with a dude who can get me 5 or 6 points a week, hopefully, and waiting till the 10th or 11th round, then going for Zach Ertz, who did at times get overshadowed by Dallas Goedert for some reason. And not that it's for some reason, they're both very talented, but I just don't want to be taking a risk at a position that is so just wasty. I don't want to waste a pick on that and find out that I picked the wrong player.
Yeah. I'm either getting a steal with the top three or I'm waiting forever. So that's my strategy.
Yeah, I mean, if you're getting Kelce or Kittle, I mean, that's where you're going, right? You're not, and that's in the third round. You're like, oh my God, I'm getting Kittle now. as opposed to, oh, I'm going to take Ertz now, and that's it for the rest of the draft. Because the tight end one is the one where, yeah, you can play two, as I notoriously did 2 years ago, and should have paid off, but it didn't. Or you play one and you pick one, and that's it. Because unlike your favorite thing to say, if you draft a tight end, unfortunately, you have to play him. you do have to with the tight end. You are going to have to start him, unfortunately. So that's the risk you take with these players that are having competition with them, Jeff. Come on, segue it up.
All right. I mean, we talked about you got to start something. You got to start somewhere, okay? A new podcast, host league. We were chatting. I think we want to do, at a bare minimum, we want to do just kind of a rando league that we co-managed. I've never co-managed a team with anyone. I mean, we saw how the one draft with Marvin Jones went. I mean, struck a canyon, a crevasse in our friendship, Will, that who knows if it will ever be mended.
Probably it'll be recovering now. God forbid if we take Marvin Jones in a league.
Oh, that'll be the end of it. I mean, where do we host it? I'm partial to Yahoo because I'm lazy and all my other leagues are on Yahoo. But Best Ball, I've been hearing rumblings of it. You've done some research. Mm-hmm. Tell the people about it. Inform me. I have a very, kind of cursory understanding of it. You have different types of best ball. I mean, this is a whole new world. This is straight Aladdin. Right?
So this is on, I believe it's MyFFBC. It's some sort of championship website with different levels of buy-ins. Very interesting buy-ins, by the way. One buy-in, $77. We get some money at some point, but of course there's different varying levels. Look, the payouts look a little bit better on this website than Yahoo. Yahoo definitely takes their chunk of percentage when it comes to the buy-ins. But when it comes to this website, Best Ball, for those who are familiar with fantasy baseball, very similar to a roto league where you don't do head-to-head matchups. There is no head-to-head. It's just highest scoring of the week gets, a point or some sort of points or tabulations. At the end of 16 weeks, whoever the highest scoring team is ends up winning. And there's only prizes for the first two teams, I believe, depending on the entry fee, I believe. Yeah, sorry, I keep saying I believe. My research, not the greatest, but it is a 16-week season, and the rules are you draft a team, and that is it. You don't set it. You don't there's no free agents. There's no trades. And the kicker, in order to really make this happen, is it's 28 rounds. There's 28 players you draft.
Bye.
So that being the reason you draft your, you draft your Carson Wentz, you better draft the backup because it's going to happen. You're not going to be able to replace them throughout the season. Now, the algorithm that this website uses is they will automatically pick your best 10 players, whatever it is.
That was going to be my question. Mm-hmm.
The two, that's 2-2 and a flex, I think. And then your defense, your kicker, your quarterback. So after the said week has performed, it just looks at what would have been your optimized lineup, and that will be your score for the week. That way, if you do have an injury or you do have, players that maybe sit out for COVID. I mean, can we just talk about this for a second? The 1 year we want to do this year, I mean, does that mean we think we have if there's any chance to win, it is this year? Or are we choosing the worst year ever to try and co-own a team? That is going to be up for debate. But 16 weeks, set it and forget it, 28 rounds, that is the best ball format. The other one is Best Ball Slim. Of course, there's your traditional ones, which we can do. Best Ball Slim is there's no kickers, no defenses, 16 weeks, but only 18 players, so a little bit quicker. Also, probably less scoring in that one. So those are the two Best Ball ones on FFBC. Any of those entice you? Any questions to those?
No, I appreciate that. Well, I mean, I'm intrigued. I thought I like that there's some algorithm setting optimizing your lineup. It is kind of interesting. You get away from the, I had this guy on my bench and I should have started him kind of a thing. because your bench is obviously insane. 28 rounds. I mean, you got to go deep in the research. I like the slim. No kickers, no D. Mm-hmm. 18 rounds. I mean, that's spicy.
You definitely intrigued me with this because you're the one who brought it up via text last week. So the ones that I did see too, I believe this FFBC is 12 teams, whereas the Yahoo Pay Leagues are 10 teams. So I don't know if that has an impact on you. I am more partial to the 12-team format. 10 teams seems to kind of stack your teams a little bit much. You can get a bit more.
When you're drafting 18 rounds.
Or 26 or 28 rounds.
28 rounds. I mean, what is that? We're not here for the math. 12 times 28, that's a lot of players.
And if I had to guess, that would be
336 players drafted. Oh, yeah, we're definitely outside your top 200.
Yeah, could print out two of those to get your top one. But where do you stand? What are you thinking on this? Give me the feelers here. You said Yahoo because you're comfortable with Yahoo, but is a 10-team pay league something you'd want to do? FFBC, we got the best ball. We got 12 teams. We got an interesting entry fee format there. What are you thinking?
Well, I think on the best ball, we do put a little skin in the game, but we keep it small. A pay league, co-owned pay league with randos, that could get, I am very intrigued by that. A little split the buy-in and gip the nine.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And we do the draft and we record the draft whenever it would be. Obviously, it would have to be an organized event between myself and you. I could see that being very entertaining. Think about that. 60 seconds a pick. Our guy gets taken. You know, me and you are scrambling with each other. Yeah. Does Marvin Jones get taken? I don't know. Marvin Jones or Darius Slayton. Who is getting the pick? I like it. I think it'll make – yeah, that'll be tested. Maybe even – can we even get a moderator in there to kind of ease the pain with us, the tensions? I kind of like it. I kind of like it, Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
I want to do it.
We'll make it happen. We will make it happen.
Absolutely. So that'll be
put it on the
who
Google.
Who knows when that'll be though. Yeah. Who knows when that'll be. We still got a month before the season starts. 27 days, I think. 28 days. 4 weeks, yeah. 4 weeks from today. Chiefs, Texans. Supposedly. Well, according to me, it is gonna happen if you go to the Google Doc. Yep. What an episode today, Jeff. Whew. Ted Lasso. Oh,
a good one.
The midnight premiere tonight. I actually don't know if there is a midnight release on Apple Plus TV. But I'll be there for it, Jeff. We will have the review, and maybe this time next week there will be more stuff set in stone with Fantasy Leagues. But until then, I think we will have to wait and see, Jeff. Thanks for listening to the All the Feels Fantasy Podcast. Peace.
Peace out.